known as the wisdom literature, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job. And they're all asking the question, what does it mean to live well in this? We're exploring three books in the Bible known as the wisdom literature, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job. And they're all asking the question, what does it mean to live well in this world?
So we've looked at Proverbs, who you could think of as a bright young teacher.
She's all about pursuing wisdom, an attribute of God that's woven into reality. And she's optimistic that if you use wisdom, you will build a successful life.
But then we come to Ecclesiastes, who's more like this sharp, middle-aged critic. And he says,
"You think using wisdom will bring you success. You'd better think again, because life here under the sun is meaningless."
And that's a phrase he uses a lot in this book.
But to understand this book, we have to realize first that we're hearing two voices.
So first there's the teacher, and we've been calling him the critic. He's the main voice in the book.
But he is introduced to us by another figure, the author. And he's the one who's collected the critic's words, and then at the end of the book summarizes everything and gets the final word.
So why does the author want us to hear from the critic?
Well, he wants to turn your view of the world upside down, and he's going to let the critic explore three really disturbing things about the world.
And we should warn you, these are pretty intense.
Yeah. So the first is the march of time, or as the critic says,
"Generations come and generations go, but the earth, it's been here long before us and will be long after. No one remembers people from long ago, and all the people yet to come, they too will be forgotten by those who come after them."
So, on a cosmic scale, you and I, we are just a blip. Stars are born, and then they die and form planets which orbit new stars, and those planets, they change over time and eventually burn up.
And amidst this cosmic backdrop, my entire existence is like a blink in time.
Which leads to the critic's second disturbing observation, that we are all going to die.
"Humans face the same fate as the animals, death. All people, the righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, those who offer sacrifices to God and those who do not, they all share the same destiny. All this activity and madness, then we all join the dead."
Man, this book is depressing.
And so is the final disturbing thing for the critic, and that is life's random nature.
So in Proverbs, life isn't random. There's a clear cause and effect relationship between doing the right thing and being rewarded.
But the fact is that life doesn't always work that way. The critic has observed a glitch in the system. He calls it chance, or in his words,
"The race doesn't always go to the swift, or the battle to the strong, nor does food always come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favor to the educated. Time and chance happen to them all."
So his point is that you can't really control anything in life. It's just way too unpredictable.
So if I want to master life,
then you're setting yourself up for a fall. Now, throughout the book, the critic uses a metaphor to tie together all of these disturbing ideas. Nearly 40 times, he says that everything in life is hevel. It's a Hebrew word that means smoke or vapor. Like smoke, life is beautiful and mysterious.
It takes one shape, and before you know it, it takes a new shape.
And smoke looks solid, but try and grab it, it'll slip right through your fingers.
And when you're stuck in the thick of it, like fog, it's impossible to see clearly.
Now, our modern translations have lost the metaphor, and they usually translate hevel as meaningless. But if you read closely, the critic isn't saying that life has no meaning, but rather that its meaning is never clear. Like smoke, life is confusing, it's disorienting and uncontrollable.
So, what are we supposed to do with all of this?
Well, surprisingly, the critic first of all acknowledges the perspective of Proverbs. He says it's a really good idea to learn wisdom and to live in the fear of the Lord.
Really? I mean, he just said that doesn't guarantee success.
But he knows it's the right thing to do. But secondly, and more often, he says that since you can't control your life, you should stop trying. Learn to hold things with an open hand, because you really only have control over one thing, and that's your attitude towards the present moment. Stop worrying, he says, and choose to enjoy a good conversation with a friend, or the sun on your face, or a good meal with people that you care about.
The simple things in life.
Yes, and both the good things and the bad, because both are rich gifts from God. And that's the surprising wisdom of Ecclesiastes.
Listening to the critic is painful and can lead you into some dark places.
And that's why the author speaks up at the end of the book. He doesn't want you to lose hope. He wants to make you humble into someone who trusts that life has meaning even when you can't make sense of it, that one day God will clear the heaven and bring his justice on all that we've done. And so he tells us that the proper response to all of this is to fear the Lord and keep his commandments.
And that's the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, there's one more voice in the Bible's wisdom literature, and that's the book of Job.
And he will bring us the final, much-needed perspective on our journey into wisdom.
Hello, hello. So, like I was saying, we've been really enjoying this book. It's been a really fun time for us to sort of go deep into this text and to grapple with some pretty serious things as the video talked about. Back when I was studying architecture in 2010, I went on an architectural study tour to Spain. Has anyone been to Spain? A few of you? Yeah. And near the end of the trip, I lost my passport. Yeah. I'd left it behind in Barcelona, and we were on our way to Madrid to fly home in a couple of days. Has anyone had that experience? Ooh, it's not fun. So I got myself a ticket on a high-speed train to rush back from Madrid to Barcelona to pick it up so that I could return to Madrid to fly home. It was actually a pretty cool experience riding on that train. Has anyone been on a high-speed train? They travel up to 310 kilometers an hour on land. That's pretty awesome. And so as you sit there looking out the window, it's all just a blur. Everything is passing by just quicker than you can blink. And so I was sitting there looking out the window, and in one of those flashes of sight, I saw a farmer working amongst his crops. I assume that's what he was doing. It was so quick. As the kilometers passed quickly between me and the farmer, I sat thinking about him and wondering what his day might have been like. And I imagined it was quite a contrast to my own. I mean, here I was, zipping across the country 800 kilometers to get my passport so that I could rush back to Madrid so that I could fly thousands of kilometers to come home. I wondered what his day was like. I imagined the farmer working quietly in his fields in the morning sun, getting up a bit of a pleasant sweat as he worked amongst his crops. And then when the sun was at its height, he heads back into his home to enjoy a meal with his wife. It gets hot in Spain. Maybe he'd enjoy a glass of Spanish red wine. Patting his belly, he kicks off his boots and lies down for a bit of a midday siesta. I like how the Spanish do that. I think we should do that here. After his break, he heads back out to continue pottering amongst his crops. The farmer, in my mind's eye, knew exactly what Ecclesiastes is about. Light is sweet. This is chapter 11 if you've got your Bibles. Light is sweet, and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. However many years anyone may live, let them enjoy them all. But let them remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. Everything to come is hevel. It's meaningless. Now, I don't know if any of you were cheats in maths back in school. Any cheats here? Now is a good time in your homework to have looked at the back of the book to get the answers. That's what we're doing today. After all these puzzles and difficult questions of Ecclesiastes over the last 5 weeks, today we get the resolution to the writer Kohelet's quest for wisdom in chapters 11 and 12. Summed up here for us in chapter 11, verses 7 to 8. Our lives are built on the twin actions of rejoicing and remembering. This is how we're to make sense of time, of death, of the randomness of life that the video talked about, the hevel of a world awaiting its king. Let's start with this first action that he recommends. Rejoice, enjoy life. Earlier in the chapter, the writer has a few you don't knows. You don't know what disaster may come upon the land. You don't know the path of the wind or how the body's formed in the mother's womb. You can't understand the work of God. You don't know which will succeed. It's all hevel to us. It's all smoke. We just don't know what's going to happen in the future. So the writer's advice? Sow your seed in the morning. And at evening, let not your hands be idle. Earlier in the week, we had dinner with the Adams family. We had Jeremy up here this before. And we were playing the Would You Rather game with them. You know, would you rather be able to breathe underwater, or would you rather be able to walk through a door? That sort of thing. Conversation got a little morbid, though, when one of the kids came up with one and said, would you rather know when you were going to die? Or how you were going to die? That was a good question. And so we talked about that for a while, and it made for some interesting conversation. Our conclusion was that either one would certainly make you think more about how you live your life. It's interesting, eh, how death can make you think more about life. If you suddenly found out today that this was your last day alive, how would you feel? Would you have any regrets? A few years ago, a palliative care nurse wrote a book about the five biggest regrets of her patients in the final days of their lives. With your neighbour, just for a minute, what do you think would have been on that list of the biggest regrets of the dying? What do you think is their biggest regret? Tell your neighbour what you think it would be. I'm going to read out the list of the five biggest regrets, and we'll see if you got any of them right. The first was, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, and not the life others expected of me. Another one is, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Did anyone guess that one? Yeah. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. The third, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. The fourth, I wish I'd stayed in touch with my friends. That's a good one. And the last one, I wish I'd let myself be happier. In light of this passage in Ecclesiastes, I find this last one especially interesting. Ecclesiastes, again in chapter 11, says, you who are young, be happy while you're young, and let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. In the nurse who wrote that book, in her words, she said, many of the patients didn't realize that happiness is a choice. They'd stayed stuck in old patterns and habits, pretending to others and to themselves that they were content, when deep within, they longed to laugh and have silliness in their life again. But our world gives us more attention to sorrow than joy. Our world's constantly trying to surprise us with tragedy. If you look at the news, right, it's full of news about car accidents and murders and conflicts. Our TVs and web pages are clogged with images of hatred, of violence, of racism, of destruction, of lust. And so our focus becomes on trying to survive in this world of sorrow. Henry Nouwen wrote a book near the end of his life called Here and Now. He spoke about a friend who was always full of joy, not because his life was easy, but because he habitually recognized the presence of God in every moment, in the midst of all suffering. His friend didn't deny the sorrow of the world. He didn't have his eyes shut or his ears closed to the world's suffering, but his spirit gravitated towards the light and the darkness, so that he'd speak about the sun, even though the sky was covered with clouds. We've had a wet old week. I wonder how many of us managed that sort of joy this week, to speak about the sun, even when it was raining. Yeah, you loved it. I enjoyed it too. Yeah. In Nuon's words, and maybe you've got this, Rob, joy doesn't simply happen to us. We have to choose joy and keep choosing it every day. It's a choice based on the knowledge that we belong to God and have found in God our refuge and our safety, and that nothing, not even death, can take God away from us. That's what Nuon says about joy. I like that. In another study about the regrets of the dying, the Legacy Project found that the most common answer was, I wish I hadn't spent so much time worrying. And that goes with Ecclesiastes' other tip for enjoying life at the end of chapter 11. Banish anxiety from your heart. It is a challenge. In the words of an 83-year-old man in the study, don't believe that worrying will solve or help anything. It won't, so stop it. I read that. Not particularly helpful, right? Just stop it. That's true, maybe. I think it may be a bit too simple. A 102-year-old woman put it a bit more sagely, a bit more in line with how we read about it in Ecclesiastes. She said, well, I think that if you worry, and you worry a lot, you have to stop and think to yourself, this too will pass. You can't just go on worrying all the time because it destroys you and life. You just have to take one day at a time. It's a good idea to plan ahead if possible, she said, but you can't always do that because things don't happen the way you were hoping they would happen. You don't know, that's what Ecclesiastes has been saying. And she finishes, so the most important thing is one day at a time. Our worries are usually framed in what-if questions. What if I lose my job? What if I can't find my passport in Barcelona? What if my father dies? What if we run out of money? What if I can't find someone to marry? What if it clogs our heads and keeps us up at night? And these worries have us dragged forward towards an unpredictable future. To draw on Henry Nuon again, real life takes place in the here and the now. God is a God of the present. God is always in the moment, be that moment hard or easy, joyful or painful. God, he says, is the God who is. And a few of you were declaring that this morning in praise. God is the God who is, and who is for me in the present moment. That's why Jesus came to wipe away the worries of the future. He wants us to discover God where we are, here and now. Coming back to verse 8, if enjoying life is about choosing joy and being present in the moment, what does it mean to remember the days of darkness? This is the other action that Kohelet the writer recommends for making sense of the hevel, the smoke of life. He unpacks this idea in chapter 12 with the highlight, or lowlight, coming in verse 7. The dust returns to the ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. About a year ago, Sarah and I went to the concert of one of our favourite artists, Sufjan Stevens. And yes, he's wearing wings in this concert. Do you remember our weird wedding song that had the line, do you realise that everyone you know someday will die? Yeah? Well, this guy's even better. Most of his songs that night were to do with death. During the concert, he had us singing along with the chorus of one of his songs that says, we're all gonna die, we're all gonna... And the whole crowd sort of just singing this along. You'd think he's a bit of a goth, right? Late in his show, he stopped in the middle, he stopped the music for a bit to give us a mini lecture about death. Here's some of what he had to say. I think it's actually pretty good. It's a shame to be singing so many songs about death in a room full of life. That's the irony. Death is the great refinery in which all substance is refined with fire. The fire will test the realness of each person's work. Ask yourself, what's the value of your work? Is it frivolous? Is it futile? Or is it eternal? As I think about death, I think that it should be a constant reminder to subdue us, to slow us down and to entreat us to think about eternal things and to stop worrying about futile things and frivolous things. To live eternally, to live fully, you must die to yourself. I've heard that before. Deny yourself to understand who you really are. That's something I've been praying about. Death, 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 death. It doesn't have to be such a burden. It doesn't have to be futile. The connection can empower you to live in the present more fully. So just kind of embrace that, he said. It's exciting. It kind of gives you freedom. Freedom to live more freely with eyes wide open. The world is abundant until you die. Let's take part in that abundance. Wow. That's quite a message, right? That's quite a big thing for a performer to say in the middle of a show. I mean, when you think of most musicians and stars these days, they're talking about life being all about sex and fame and money and glamour. He's still alive. Yep, he's still enjoying life. We saw him last year. I hope he's still alive. I want to see him again. So while the stars and so on are telling us that life's about fame and money and sex and glamour, Sufyan was reminding us that we're human. And he was challenging us not to be frivolous with our time. In the same way, Ecclesiastes reminds us that we are all going to die. Remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. But neither Sufyan nor Ecclesiastes are being entirely negative in all their talk about death. This isn't just some emo, gothic, defeatist fatalism. In fact, they're speaking a message of deep hope and godly wisdom. The wisdom of Ecclesiastes, that God is God and we are human. Have you ever sat under the stars or looked out over a vast expanse like the Grand Canyon and felt how small you are? I think that's perhaps what Kohelet's been doing. He's seeing the vastness of God through the haze and the smoke of the world. And he's been realizing that God is incredibly weighty and glorious and fearsome, while we are so lightweight and smoky. We become so concerned about making something out of ourselves, of having it all together, of making sense of it all. We're trying to elevate ourselves above what God's created us to be. But throughout this book, the writer's been reminding us that we're dust. That the meaning of our lives is beyond our grasp, it's smoke. That we shouldn't give it so much weight. The wisdom of Ecclesiastes is that success is giving yourself away so that God can make something of you. He's been reminding us that our lives are a gift and that our understanding of God is a gift. And that every moment of your life is a gift to be enjoyed with gratitude. And when we remember this, we're free to enjoy the present moment, knowing that the sun still shines behind the clouds. What if you knew when you were going to die? Would that change the way you live? A famous quote says that if I knew that the world was going to end tomorrow, I would still plant an apple tree today. If the world was going to end tomorrow, I would still plant an apple tree today. Whoever said that was someone who was happy to be in the present moment, to make the most of every moment. Jesus was the same. He knew that his time had come and that within a week he would be hung on a cross to die. That's what we're remembering today in Palm Sunday. So what did he do? He entered Jerusalem on a colt and accepted the royal welcome of the people. And as they laid palm branches on the ground before him, and they sang, "Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest heaven." the same Jesus on the colt was the one who said to his disciples, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it." Whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. And this is the foundation for wise living, as told in Ecclesiastes. I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up, and they're going to lead us in another song. And while we sing this song, we've got these cabbage branches. I didn't get palm branches, I'm sorry. I thought cabbage leaves will do. And I thought during this song, it would be great if you wanted to reflect on what you've been hearing and what God's been saying to you. If you wanted to come and pick up one of these leaves, and you might want to hold it for a bit and just reflect for a while, and then you might want to lay it at the foot of the cross. You'll notice that these leaves, they're all dead. They've fallen off the tree, which is kind of purposeful. It's reminding us that, like these leaves, we are mortal. We're finite. But there's a God who is glorious, who is weighty, who is fearsome, who is to be honored. Do you want to lay your life down for him and follow him? Or do you want to hold on to your life? I'd encourage you to do the former. So during the song, I'd invite you to come forward to take one of these leaves, to think about it, and to place it at the foot of the cross. Cheers.